Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, create a development plan for yourself. Here we go. Now, when it comes to careers, one of the most common things we get in questions is something like, hey, I want to move.
Bad questions?
The most common question we get is a bad question.
Yeah, it is. The common factor is bad questions based on myths and half-truths and misunderstandings. Yes. Okay, that aside, go ahead.
As I was saying, the question we get a lot is, you know, it's somebody that they say, like, I want to move from where I am to where I want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
And then how do I do it, right? And, you know, whether the person is talking about getting that promotion they've been waiting for or a sideways move into, kind of a lateral job or, frankly, a career change, complete career change, the steps are essentially the same. Now, here's the hard part about it. It used to be that companies did this for us, right?
Yeah.
In some companies, there are still structured career paths, right? And structured moves and your manager helps you manage it. And, especially probably at the lowest levels and in senior management. But in a lot of companies, particularly if the company is small and doesn't have a method for developing staff, they don't have a method. You're on your own. You're stuck in a wasteland. You know, you're somewhere between the plant floor and an office of your own, and you have no way out unless you take control.
There's something else here too, though, that I think is important. We talk about the fact that companies used to do it, and that's true. I think there's a misapprehension at lower levels today that when we tell people that 25 years ago companies did it, you know, right now if you're listening to us and you're 25, you're thinking, well, that's really not important to me. And you're right. After fashion, you're right. There's a couple of reasons why we tell you this, though. First of all, if you're talking to a 45 or a 50-year-old, a mentor of yours, they might talk about things you can do that would have applied had someone in HR or in the company been working on your behalf or thinking about your career. So part of this is you have to be cautious. You have to be aware of the new reality and not assume that someone with more seniority knows what the right thing to do is. In fact, if you hear a phrase like, don't worry, the company will take care of you, don't worry, people are thinking about it, I think you have to discount that enormously, almost completely, except in maybe 20 or 30 companies, maybe as many as 100 out of the millions of companies in the world. But at least in terms of name brand companies, probably only 20 or 30 or 40.
Yeah, it's like being told, trust me. And as soon as somebody says that, exactly. You better start running.
There's another piece of this, though, too. It's not just that senior people may not have the right tools for you because of the change in how careers are happening. I also sense from young people today, Mike, that they assume the company is doing it for them. They might think, yeah, I know Mark and Mike said they really don't do it. But, you know, I know there are conversations going on and I know they're promoting people. I know they're making choices about this or about that and everything else. Folks, there are some decisions being made about who's going to get promoted next, you know, the ready now and ready next mentality that I think we've talked about before. But it is not as robust as you think it is. In fact, often there really is no thinking at all. There are not senior people very often sitting around going, okay, who are my directs and who are their number twos now and who are their directs and who are their number twos now? Now, look, CEOs of $100 billion companies, they spend, you know, the smart ones spend 20%+ of their time on people. And they know the top 200 or maybe even up to 500 managers and executives in the company and who's ready now and who's ready next and so on. Now, if you read a story like that, you might think, oh, my company's doing that. That's okay. Not true. They're doing it for the executives who are paid a great deal more and have a great deal more impact on the organization than, no offense to you, than you do. And so it's important you recognize that at mid to lower levels, there's probably no one thinking about it systematically. And the advice you're going to get is really probably not all that good. And so I just want to help people understand that when we say it used to be different, it's not just we're not just hearkening back to the past, because Mike and I, frankly, don't like to hearken back to the past. We want you to understand that the advice you're often going to get is going to be wrong. And if you're thinking for a moment that, in fact, it might be happening in your company, unless you hear chapter and verse from somebody about what the process is, and you talk about managers who are getting ready to go to succession planning meetings on a regular basis, quarterly or semi-annually or something like that, it's probably not happening. And even if it is happening to some degree, to the victor goes the spoils and fortune favors the prepared, you have to assume your company isn't going to do it for you. Frankly, why would you rely on somebody else to control your career, even if they were willing? But they're not going to do it for you. That said, if you are more prepared, if you better understand the gaps and the needs for your career and so on, it's much more likely you're going to get the nod, even if there is some sort of shadow process going on. And in my experience, the shadow process is really no process at all. So this cast is to help you develop a plan for you to get from A to B, where A is where you are now and B is where you want to be, whether it's sideways or vertical or changing industries or whatever else. It is a mechanistic plan. We're going to tell you that now. You high C's in the audience, you're going to love this. You perfectionists, you folks who dot your I's and cross your T's and love projects and want tasks and so on, you're going to like this. You high I's are not going to like it, but you need it most of all. And frankly, are better prepared in some ways because your network is so much better off. So, five recommendations. Number one, you've got to establish the requirements. You've got to understand what's needed in the job you want to go to. Number two, you've got to establish a benchmark, which is to say, where am I now? Then you've got to conduct a needs analysis, which is to say, okay, where am I and where do I want to go? What's the gap and what needs exist? And then number four, you've got to work on those skills. And number five, as the famous advertising line said, lather, rinse, repeat. You've got to rinse and repeat. In other words, you've got to repeat this over and over again for all of the skill gaps you have. It's a way to chunk down into smaller, manageable bites the process of going, gee, I want to go from mechanical engineering in a technical field to sales in the fashion industry. How do I do that? Folks, it's possible. What's the old saying about how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time. And the bigger the gap you've created, the bigger the difference between where you are and where you want to go, the harder it's going to be. But I know I've said it before. I know it sounds corny. It's intended to sound corny. By the mile, it's a trial. By the yard, it's hard. And by the inch, it's a cinch.
Good. So the first step, of course, is you got to find out what skills, traits, and abilities are needed in the job you want, right? You have to establish the requirements of the job you're seeking. Now, you can work in whatever time scale you want to, folks, whether it's a promotion from a team lead to a team manager, say in the next 6 months or so, or it's a 10-year plan to become the CEO. But the step of establishing the requirements has always got to be first. And a lot of business books, when they describe this, they talk about it as if it's a map, right? The analogy is a map.
Yeah, come up with your career map, right? Come up with your path, and the path is the winding road between two points on a map. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the point here, is that you need to know what those two points are. The map is useless unless you know where you are, right? And where you want to get.
Where you want to get to, yeah.
Yeah, and it's that gap that you're working on. So working out the requirements of the job you want is establishing where you want to get to.
Yeah, it's fixing in GPS as clearly as you can, not to GPS precision, but okay, where is it I want to go? Do I want to go northeast, west, or south? And I want to tell you something. For those of you who didn't like the word mechanistic, I'm going to make it even harder for you. It's going to take some work. This is not a wing and a prayer. You high eyes, this isn't calling one of your friends and having them get you a job. This is straightforward, disciplined application of analysis, planning your work, and working your plan. Folks, if you like the phrase plan your work and work your plan, you're going to love this process. And folks, even if you don't like that phrase, when you hear this process, you're going to say, oh, that makes sense to me. And I just need to make it edible. I need to make it into small parts. I need to take the entire project and break it down into tasks that are manageable. And for some of you who are fans of our coaching process, if you're thinking, gee, this might sound like coaching a little bit, you're absolutely right, it is.
Okay, so help me a little bit here. So you got to establish what the requirements are for the job you want. But if you're not in the job, right, and you haven't interviewed for it, you may not know. So that's the first stumbling block for folks. So how do you do it? How do you do that?
So look, you got to gather some information, right? So here are some recommended things you're going to need to capture a sense of where you want to go. You want a job description for the role you want. in your organization, assuming there's one in your organization, you want a job description for similar roles in other organizations. It doesn't have to be exact, but it has to be similar, okay? You need notes, your own notes, on the backgrounds and strengths of the people in that role in your organization and others, okay? And you need to look at your previous reviews. You need to be ready to do a self-analysis and look at your own feedback that you've gotten regarding your strengths and weaknesses as well, okay? Now, let's talk about those a little bit more detail, right? You can usually get a hold of a job description for any role in your organization, even if it's not currently being advertised from HR, okay? If the company's small and they don't have an HR department, make your own notes on what you think the job description would be if there were one, okay? And frankly, I'd be willing to bet now that if you Googled the job title and a company that's in the industry that you want, you could, after doing 15 to 30 minutes worth of Googling around various tangential or oblique references to the job, you could get a rough idea of what that job description is. It's not going to be perfect, but what we're trying to avoid is just saying, well, I want to do this job, but I don't know how to get there. We're going to get as good a rough estimate as we possibly can to help us come up with a plan to move in the right direction. Is 30% of our energy going to be wasted if our job description is not exact? Yes. But is 100% of our energy going to be wasted if we don't do any sort of planning? Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, again, if you don't take this step, the chance of you knowing what the specific requirements are for this job you want, never having been in it, never been a hiring manager to hire somebody in that position, you may actually have a very limited view of what is actually required. And so you have to validate this stuff externally.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the longer term, if your company advertises roles you might be interested in the future, print out whatever details you can get, take them home with you. So in other words, if you're thinking about it, 3 or 4 promotions from now, when they advertise for that job, go to the company HR website. In fact, look, put 15 minutes down in your calendar once every 6 weeks. So that's a minute a week of your life. 15 minutes every 6 weeks to write, to go to the company's HR website, see what jobs are open, what jobs they're advertising for, and the ones that seem interesting to you, copy and paste the job description. And that's going to give you a rough sense of what that job is like. Look, if you can, if you work near HR, go look. There's, as funny as it sounds, some companies are still introducing their earnings reports on press releases. Some are not, and more are moving in the direction of the web. But some companies are still printing out manual job descriptions, manual advertisements, and posting them on flip charts or bulletin boards in the HR department. So this stuff is freely available, and it could be useful to you. And I got to tell you something. If I were a young person, if I had just started my professional career, and over the course of the next 2 years, the company was growing, I went to HR every couple of weeks, and I got all the job descriptions. Pretty soon, I'd have 100 or so job descriptions. I'd have a pretty good sense of anybody in the organization, what they did and why they were doing it.
Yeah.
And no offense, that'd be political leverage for me. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. Just knowing what other people are responsible for, who reports to whom, and so on is helpful. Okay, look, going further, you can find job descriptions for similar roles in other organizations on Monster.com, or on Indeed.com, or you could look at specialty boards in your industry. If you don't know about a specialty board in your industry, send a note to Wendy or me, and we'll be happy to help. Okay. If you know your competitors, and please, folks, surely you must know your competitors, look on their websites too. Now, you might be saying, wait a minute, I want to stay in my own company. And frankly, all things being equal, because goodwill is lost when you change companies, you do want to stay in your company. Now, not all things are ever equal, but if they are, you do want to get promoted within your own company. But why would you want to do this if you want to stay in your company? Because often job descriptions and advertisements for given jobs are not very good at describing the role. Okay, you might find that your company only says account management roles are fun and exciting and doesn't tell you anything about the skills you need. But if you get multiple examples, you're much more likely to get a 70% solution. Okay, I said earlier, how to eat an elephant in one bite? Well, think about the the three blind men who are touching the elephant, one on the trunk, one on the leg, and one on the tail. One thinks it's a tree, one thinks it's a snake, and one thinks it's, I don't know, a vine or something like that. But if you had 100 people touching the elephant and all of them talk to each other, well, you'd have a pretty good sense of that's probably an elephant, particularly if one of them got squashed. So multiple examples give you more comprehensive data. Now, I want to stop here. And I want to challenge some of you. You're saying, gosh, do I have to go get job descriptions? Look, if it's too hard already, stop listening now and recognize that you don't want a map. You don't want a plan. You just want to hope. But as the book that was written about logistics, I think during the Gulf War by an American general, don't forget, hope is not a method. Don't hope you get something, then wonder why you don't. The other disadvantage of looking at job descriptions or advertisements, what have you, is they describe an ideal situation. You have to know that, right? In fact, I've had people look at the job description for the job they're doing and they're saying, wow, man, I sound good. And their boss tells them, yeah, you're not that good. We're looking for somebody better than you. If every job description you find says account managers need organized financial skills, and you know the account managers in your company and they all rely on accounting to produce their figures, then you can consider dismissing the need for financial skills. If, on the other hand, every person who ever got promoted to call center manager in your company started as a call center operator and you didn't, you might want to consider moving to another company. That's why, as well as the job descriptions, you also need to look at the people in the job. It's a reality check, okay?
You didn't mention it, but I assume you'd agree that it might be a good idea to actually go talk to somebody who's actually in that kind of job.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the whole point of it, right? You want to make sure that the job description is not wackily out of whack, if you will. And by the way, I want to mention something. I shared these show notes with a friend of mine recently, and he said, I didn't understand your first example. You said that all account managers need financial skills, but the account managers in the company rely on accounting to produce their figures. Isn't that financial skill? No, folks. We're distinguishing between financial skills and accounting skills, which are two different things, just to be clear, okay? But yeah, look, so here's what we want you to do, okay? We want you to gather the information, consolidate all the job descriptions you have under five headings: skills, traits, abilities, experience, and qualifications, okay? Look at the data within those categories. Ask yourself what comes up most often and what is the difference in the role in the organization where you want to work, whether it's your organization, your company, or somewhere else. Now what you do is you validate that list against the people you know that are in the role. Okay. Now, you might be thinking, wait, I don't know anybody. Well, okay, you need a bigger network. That's an additional duty you have on this project you have of mapping your path and then walking your path. And if you don't realize that we've been saying that for 5 years, well, welcome to Manager Tools. Your network needs to be bigger. In the beginning of your career, your success can be assured simply by delivering results that you're responsible for to your boss and to the organization. But over time, relationships become more and more important. Your need the requirement for you to produce more for the company doesn't come from you getting more results from your individual abilities, although certainly that does happen. It's the additive or the multiplicative effect of relationships that allow you to get even more done. And that's part of the reason goodwill vanishes when you go from company A to company B. We're not suggesting you can't have a great career by moving around in different companies. You can, but it's far easier to do it in one company, all things being equal, which again, they never are. So you want to validate that list against the people you know who are in the role, right? And you're going to ask yourself, okay, do they in fact have it or don't they? Okay. Now what we're going to do is you want to cut that list down to the most often five requirements per heading. Okay. Look, we know all the skills and traits and et cetera and so on are required, at least in one of the roles that you considered in this comparison about your end state that you want to get to, your destination, it's unlikely that the 20th skill you have listed is the most important. If you cut the lists down to five, you're going to have 25 items to work with, which is really kind of a manageable number.
Good. Okay, so now we've established where we're going, right? If we're looking at the map, right. We need to know where we're going. So now we have that. Now we need to figure out where we are. And we describe that as establishing a benchmark.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm in Texas. Oh, that's right. I guess you're in Northern Virginia. Does that help? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Actually, you know, it's interesting. You know, this is interesting, Mike. I'm saying I'm in Texas, but this is the last podcast we'll ever record in the office that I've recorded Manager Tools Cast in, right?
Yes. The office that we've begun Manager Tools on this is the last one. Wow. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
I'm moving. I sold the house and still in Texas, still in Fredericksburg, this is famous. And folks, if it does sound a little echoey in here, it's because everything is gone. The only thing left of my family in this house and the office, separate building on the property, is the wireless internet connection, the cable internet connection.
Right. And you wouldn't be doing the podcast there if it weren't for the your internet connection, right? That's,
yeah, exactly.
That's what we need.
Exactly. We really need the internet connection. My brain power and voice, we don't need it. We just need the internet.
Okay. So I'm actually not talking about physical location. I'm talking about establishing the skill gap, right?
Yeah,
the gap exactly. Of where we are now and where we want to be. So you need to know where you are if you're going to establish what that gap is.
Exactly. So you've got in each of the skills, traits, abilities, characteristics, so on, you've got five, the top five in each. And so you've got a total of 25, 5x5 matrix. And you take that list of 25 and give yourself a score out of 5 for each item, with 1 being minimal, no knowledge, no experience, don't know anything. 3 being, I'm doing okay. And 5 is expert at the level required in the role. Okay. Some items are going to be pretty easy. If all the heads of research in your scientific company have a PhD in a relevant subject, folks, it's a requirement, okay? And you either have a PhD or you don't. It's pretty well a binary choice. If you don't have a PhD, you've got a 1. On the other hand, you might have noticed that all the CEOs you know have totally awesome presentation skills. They do. If you didn't know that, by the way, they do. how do you rank yourself relative persuasion skills? And let me put it this way, folks, based on what Mike and I see in terms of persuasion, I would say that if you have any doubts, there's no way you're a 5, you might be a 3. And if you really want to develop yourself, give yourself a 1 and recognize you've got a big gap.
Let me ask you a question. When ranking yourself, are you let's say you're a team lead, a software development team lead.
So you have no persuasion skills. Is that what you're saying?
Let's say you do. You can persuade a bunch of developers. But let's say your next promotion is you're really setting a plan to get to become a manager, right? A manager of like 30 people or so.
Okay.
Are you going to look at the CEO and look at her persuasion skills and rate yourself from 1 to 5 based upon her persuasion skills? Or are you doing something different? Is it relative to the job you want or relative to the ultimate persuader, the CEO?
Oh, gosh. No, you go with your gut, how you feel about your persuasion skills. But look, I don't evaluate my persuasion skills. I'm not sure I understand you. Why would I give myself a ranking based on how she persuades?
Yeah, I guess the question is the standard. Is this the standard you're rating yourself on? Is persuasion skills necessary for the next job or persuasion skills in some abstract way?
Okay, then you could just go with your gut. It's not an abstract. If you feel like your persuasion skills are effective for your level and you're going up a level, but there's a gap and you believe that you need to be a 5 and you're only a 3, then there's a gap. You don't need to compare yourself now in that role. If you're a 3 today in persuasion skills and you want to get promoted to a job where you think 5 is something that's important, then you can't give yourself a 5 now. Now, if you think you're a 5 in this role, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
I see what you're saying. If I think I'm a 5 in persuasion skills and I have to be a 5 at the higher level, but the question is, am I really a 5 at the higher level?
I'm a 5 relative to other team leads in IT, but compared to managers, senior managers, directors, I know I'm not a 5. I'm a 2.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I think you evaluate yourself where you are now. And so if you think you're a five in your present role, even if the new role requires a five at a higher level, then you're probably okay. I don't think that's going to happen that often. I think that the disparities are going to be more obvious, but that's okay. I think it's a good question, the perspective you're taking when you look at it. Look, folks, you can go with your gut. You're probably not going to be that wrong. But look at your previous reviews. That should help you a little bit. If everybody says you're a four out of five, let's say your company uses a standard 1 to 5 ranking scale. It's not a standard, but it's a fairly common ranking scale on a 1 to 5. If you're a four, folks, what that means is you can't give yourself a five. Okay. Now, if you're a five in everything, I still would not give yourself a five across the board in the skills and traits and abilities that you need, just because probably your performance review system is inflated. But if you're not maxed out in a particular area, unless you know the distribution, then you want to be very careful in terms of giving yourself a five in a particular area. And look, if out of 25 areas, you're a five in 16 or more, I would raise an eyebrow. I would say you might as well just wait until you get promoted.
In that case. How come you haven't been promoted already?
Yeah, which would suggest that maybe you're not a five.
Maybe. Just maybe.
So, okay. Look, it's rare that you're starting from a standing start, you know, and if you're trying to go to the very, very top of your company, you should have at least some of the things at a five level, at the level you are now. And that's good. That's fine. Okay. On the other hand, if you're creating a plan to go to shop floor to CFO or CEO or whatever, your research should have given you some of the steps in between. And frankly, if you're doing this for the first time and you want to come up with a path to get the CEO job of a company with 9 or 10 levels between you and the CEO, what we call echelons above reality, then don't do that the first time you use this process. This is a process that works well, but the first time you do it, you're going to be like all humans. You're going to stink at it. And so what you want to do, my recommendation is to build your yellow brick road 5 or 6 bricks in front of you at a time. Get a promotion. If you have a perfect plan to get CEO and you never get promoted because you're working on step 7, when in fact you're not getting past step 1, you're wasting your time. Okay. So look, there are steps in between you and the top. So CEOs tend to have line management and operational experience. Do this whole process from step 1 to step 3 for a line management role in an operational division. Then do it for the next stage, or perhaps 2, line manager to VP, and so on and so on and so on until you get to CEO. Okay?
Good. So now we know where we are. We know where we're going. And we have this gap. The next step here is to conduct a needs analysis.
Yeah. So basically what you do is you work out where you lack the right skills, traits, abilities, experience, and qualifications. And then you resort your list so that it's ordered by the score you gave yourself. So your list might look like, persuasion skills 5, master's degree 5, collaboration skills 4. Okay. And then on down at the bottom, there's operational experience and finance experience. They both have 1s, let's say. And anything where you already score a 5, you can dismiss. Look, if your ambitions aren't too grand, too big, that will be a good chunk of your list, and that's fine. And then what you do, this is a gap analysis, right? You look at the remainder of those things that you've got to work on, and you prioritize. Remember back, Mike, we said something in the rule of job applications cast. We gave some guidance about the rule of job applications, and we said there's no such thing as a perfect candidate.
Yeah, and this is true here, right? None of your competitors for this role are going to have every single skill, every single trait that the manager wants at a level of 5, right?
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
So we don't need to complete the whole list. We want to aim, we want to get to a 4 or 5 skill on about 20 items on the list, okay? If you've already dismissed the 5s on your list and you've got 15 of those 25 left, you're doing pretty good. Because you think about it, if we only need 5s in 10 items, then you're halfway there, right? prioritize the remaining 15 by importance to the role, based on what you understand, on the ease of obtaining them and the ease of learning them. Okay, this is important. If one of your 15 requirements is to get an MBA and the other 14 are all skills you can learn on the job or with some coaching and reading and practice and so on, you put the MBA last, okay? And frankly, this is the biggest reason why MBAs don't boost people's careers in ways that are commensurate with their cost often. The person needs 14 other skills they don't have. They don't learn in their MBA. And so the investment can't be used because they can't get the job they want. An MBA is not, if you have an MBA, we dismiss these as the skills. You've got to have all of it. And frankly, the number of times I've spoken in MBA schools, one of the things I see is we're making smart people even smarter about business theory and process and systems and operationalizations and technology and technical stuff. And they don't have the people skills, and all the MBA programs in the world won't give you the kind of people skills you need. Now, if one of the items were advanced Microsoft Excel skills, and no matter how hard you try, you can't understand more than basic addition on a spreadsheet, and it's not the number one skill required, you put it last. Now, what that means is we want to work on our strengths, not on our weaknesses. It's not exactly strengths. We're going to work on our relative strengths from those things. Since we've already taken our strengths off of the list, we're going to work on the group that's left. There are relative strengths and relative weaknesses. We're not saying you're strong or weak in any of this stuff. We're just saying you work on that stuff, which you're closer to getting to where you need to be. Don't try to bring the floor up, because you may reduce the chances that you'll get ruled out in an interview, but you won't get the job because you won't have enough strengths.
Good. Now, look, I'm a smart guy. I figured this out. We know where we are. We know where we want to get.
Right.
We know the gap. We've done the needs analysis.
Yeah.
So I guess now we go work on those skills. How's that? All 10 of them, all at one time.
Gosh, it's just amazing, just brilliant, beyond brilliant. But look, here's the key, though. Here's the mistake that everybody makes. They come up with 10 separate mini paths for all 10 of the skills they need to work on. And they've got these 10 paths all intertwined, and they have a picture in their mind of a rope that each individual strand of the rope makes the rope stronger and so on. Hogwash, total crap. You're not going to do that, folks. That sounds great in theory, but not in practice. Choose one or two things you're going to work on and work on those first. Okay? Now, this step where you work on the skills is basically a self-directed version of our coaching model as part of the Manager Tools Trinity, right? We encourage you to go listen to the coaching model, the revised cast. But just so you know, roughly, to construct a plan, what you do is you set a goal, you brainstorm some resources, you create a plan, and then you act out that plan. Okay, so setting a goal, you describe a behavior you want, a result you want to achieve by a given date. For instance, attain CNE, Certified Network Engineer status, by 1 December. Run the staff meeting by 30 October, for instance. Or, for instance, close 75% of sales by 31 July. Each goal has a measurable behavior, and it has a deadline. Okay, and sometimes the behaviors are results, for instance, CNE status, which is a proxy for the behaviors that are required in order to get the status. The second step is you sit down and you make a list of you brainstorm resources. You make a list of all the possible resources which could help you. And the key here is all the possible resources. Don't censor yourself. Okay, if you listen to the brainstorming podcast, I know now we've referred you to two podcasts. If you're not willing to listen to two other podcasts, other than the fact that you don't like us, that's a different story. But if you're not willing to put 30 minutes twice into this process to get you from A to B, then you're probably not willing to work hard enough to get there. Unless you have a friend in a high place that's going to magically tap you, like all you high eyes think that's what's going to happen. So listen to the brainstorming cast, and it tells you don't censor yourself. Throw out anything you want. If you want to say peanut butter, write down peanut butter just to get your creative juices flowing. Don't worry about whether you can afford the solution or not. It doesn't matter. Just get the biggest, fattest, longest possible list of resources you can. Okay. I often say at conferences, what we want is a big fat pile of ideas. The technical term for good brainstorming is a big fat pile. And then what you do is you look at all your resources, the possible ways you can improve, whether they're books or Google or training or software or mentors or coaches or videotapes or audio tapes or professional organizations or offsites or a trip to Bahamas, whatever. Oh,
I'm completely confused at this point. I'm in a big fat pile. Now, how do I pick one?
Yeah, well, here, look, you just choose one that sounds good to you and make yourself a plan, right? So you think, now, obviously, cost may be a factor since you're self-developing, so maybe you'll read a couple of books first.
Maybe that course in the Bahamas won't be the one you're going to.
Yeah, probably won't be going to the Bahamas, okay? Choose one of the resources that you've got in the list that appeals to you that you think might be helpful to inch you forward, okay, and make yourself a plan. I'm going to do this by this date. I'm going to do this by this date. A plan is just a list of tasks you're going to engage in with a deadline around them. So it could be find out where the local learning center is for CNE status by 15 October. Register for the next available CNE course by 18 October. Buy the required books for the course by 20 October. Okay? Don't tell yourself, oh, yeah, I need to start a CNE course. Great. That's a good start, but it's like it's a wish. It's not an actual plan. What you've got to do is what are the steps you've got to come up with? Often at conferences, I come up with 5 or 6 or 7 steps just for buying a book, simply because the more steps that are smaller you have, the easier they are to do, the less likely you are to put them off. And every time you do one, you're more motivated to continue in the process. Okay. Now, look, I often describe coaching the process of developing someone as building a yellow brick road. And if, in fact, the yellow bricks were gold, if you had a choice, would you buy all the gold and put it all down and build a road from here to there? Or if you could, would you just buy 100 bricks, lay about 20 of them in front of you or 30 of them in front of you, and then walk forward and then put the next bit in front of you and then pick up the ones you have? And you only have to build a little bit of road at the time and then use the brick, then take the bricks that you've just walked over and put them in front of you.
I think that's great. I love that idea because what it comes to my mind immediately is that I'll get to the goal and the road won't be behind me, and therefore I'll be the only one at the top. So great approach.
Nice. Yeah. You know you're at the top when you're standing on other people, right? Yeah. So don't go too far into the future. Don't build something 85 weeks out or even 10 weeks out. You know what? Everybody's got a plan. And when people go into box in a boxing match, everybody's got a plan until they get hit. So don't build a 14-week plan and then be really frustrated that all of a sudden your boss has a bunch of work for you to do and your development plan is scrapped. Don't do that to yourself. And the last step is, look, act on the plan every single week and report to yourself on how you're doing. If you don't report your activity and you privately say, well, something happened and so it's okay, right? But report to yourself. Write yourself an email saying, here are the things I did this week that I, you know, here are the stuff that I didn't do. If you have a buddy who's willing to help you get where you want to go, have your buddy be your unofficial project manager, and the project is your own self-development. And report in every week and hold yourself accountable to the same standard that you would hold others to if you had people working for you.
Yeah, and you work hard enough at it, right? At some point, you're going to give yourself a 4 or 5 in the skill that you're working on, the skill that you chose. And then you just rinse and repeat, right? Just pick the next skill, start working down the list and do it over. And over time, you're going to be skilling yourself towards the role that you want. You'll get noticed for being better at the things that you are working on, the things that make you promotable.
Yeah, I think that's important, the things that you'll get noticed, right? I mean, some people are saying, well, what if I'm wrong? Well, you probably will be wrong about 30% of the time. 70% of energy will be valuable. It'll be 70% of energy that other people don't spend. And what's most important is not that you're getting exactly what you want, but that you're moving in the right direction and people are going to notice that you're self-developing. And when you apply for the role, all that work you've done will be easy to demonstrate in an interview. People will know, and you're going to be a stronger candidate.
Yeah, I love the idea that you're going to go apply for the job, and you're going to have demonstrable skills. You're going to be able to show that you've actually done this stuff, right?
Yep. And look, not only is this process good for you as an individual contributor, if you want to become a manager, it teaches you how to develop people. And that's one of the core skills of manager, right? If you had that on your list, developing people, and you've gone through this whole process, give yourself a 5 or maybe a 4 out of 5 for developing other people. Well done. And that's it. Look, establish requirements, figure out where you're going on the, what's the end point of your journey on this map? Then establish a benchmark about where you are, do the needs analysis, compare where you are to where you want to go, figure out which ones you're going to work on, and then work on those skills, and then rinse and repeat and work on a different skill. Always be working on one or two skills at a time. Don't work on too many at the same time. And if it sounds mechanistic, it's designed to be that way, so you'll have a lot of opportunities to adjust. It won't just be a vague sense of I'm heading in the right direction, but there'll be step-by-step processes along the way. And some of it will be vague. Keep moving forward, and you'll find out you'll end up in a better place.
Yeah. Mechanistic, boring, unsexy, and works like a charm.
It works like
time.
A charm, yeah.
All right, my friend.
Thanks, partner.
We'll see you. Bye. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll see y'all back here again next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long. Thank you.